This is Fresh Air. It's hard to know exactly when the self-help movement began, but the movement today seems to be running at a fever pitch. Tune in during a public TV fund drive, and you're likely to find John Bradshaw, one of the leaders of the recovery movement, mesmerizing an audience of adults with talk of dysfunctional families and wounded inner children. Just check out some of the titles at your local bookstore: Healing the Child Within, Rediscovering Your Discarded Self, Learning to Love Yourself, Finding Your Self-Worth. And recovery groups are not just for alcoholics and drug addicts anymore. If you work too much, eat too much, shop too much, exercise too much, have sex too much, there's a support group for you. This is a trend that worries writer David Reif. In an article in the October issue of Harper's Magazine, he cautions against the message of these recovery groups, that everyone is a victim.
The original self-help groups were about very specific kinds of difficulty. I mean, all the recovery movement, I think they themselves would admit this, is based on AA, on Alcoholics Anonymous. And they never imagined, I don't think, the people who founded AA, that they were starting a movement which could be applied almost to anything. People seem in this movement to make absolutely no distinction between, say, the need to recover from having been abused as a child to simply working too hard.
There are a number of proponents of this most recent recovery movement. I think John Bradshaw is considered, if not the leading, probably the most popular proponent. What would you say his essential message is?
Well, I think Bradshaw's principal message is that we have all been abused as children. He starts from the idea that child abuse is not a phenomenon of a small or relatively small group of people in this country, but a phenomenon which is sort of culture-wide, if you like. I think he does this parenthetically by a kind of sleight of hand where he describes abuse as not simply being a sexual assault or a physical battery, but any kind of unwelcome psychological pressure. But leaving that to one side, his line is, we've all been abused, we're all in recovery, and therefore the only job, if you like, that a person can do in order to reestablish their mental and moral equilibrium is to treat themselves. And through he and another leading recovery therapist, a woman called Linda Capaccioni, have come up with the term inner child. Your wounded inner child, the child who is not properly nurtured by your parents, needs to be healed before you can get on with your life. And I think that's the basis of the Bradshaw message.
Do you believe that there is some truth to that message?
Well, I think that it's certainly true that many more people were abused as children than the medical establishment or for that matter, probably the sociological establishment wanted to admit. What troubles me about recovery, and the reason I think it's such a fraudulent way of looking at the world, such a mistaken way of looking at the world, is that they rob words of all their meaning. They don't satisfy themselves with saying more kids have been abused than society likes to admit. They go on to say that practically any kind of inadequate parenting is a form of child abuse. And I think what they're really doing is making an entirely ridiculous argument with human nature. Because, of course, the fact of the matter is that no parent is going to do a perfect job. But that doesn't make all these parents child abusers, as the Bradshaw people would like to claim.
When you heard that phrase, inner child, what did it mean to you, if anything?
Well, when I first heard it, I thought it was preposterous. I thought most of us have spent our adult lives trying to run away from our inner child. We're all too childish as it is, it seems to me.
Did it have any meaning sort of beyond that, even to think about a wounded part of yourself?
But you see, my quarrel with the recovery movement and with people like Bradshaw is not based on any disagreement that there are wounded parts of oneself. Of course they are. There are. It's Bradshaw and the recovery movement's absolute unwillingness to view life in tragic terms that probably got me upset enough to write this piece. I think the mere fact of death, something from which we don't recover, it seems to me should be enough to make one very suspicious of this kind of optimistic blather. The refusal to accept tragedy, the refusal to accept life's limitations, seemed to me when I first heard about the recovery movement, and still seems to me to be its worst and most important flaw.
Writer David Reif is my guest, and he has an article in the October edition of Harper's called Victims All: Recovery, Codependency, and the Art of Blaming Somebody Else. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Writer David Reif is my guest, and his article in the latest edition of Harper's is about the proliferation of self-help books and self-help gurus, as he describes them, people using the addiction and recovery model and language to try to explain human existence, I guess. I wonder, too, what you thought during the war in the Persian Gulf when people tried to explain, and these would be psychohistorians, tried to explain the actions of Saddam Hussein by investigating his past. I know it's been done with Hitler. Apparently he was abused as a child, and this is used maybe not to justify, but certainly to explain the Holocaust itself.
Well, this all comes from the work of a rather well-known Swiss psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, Alice Miller. I think it's nonsense, I must say, frankly. What I think this provides is an excuse for turning away from politics and also turning away from judgment. I mean, if we're all victims, if, to use the most extreme example, even Hitler is a victim, and Bradshaw is absolutely categorical on this. In his books, he says over and over again that Nazism can be explained because Hitler was abused, which seems to me, first of all, in the face of things, rather doubtful, since the kind of brutal upbringing Hitler had was also the upbringing of people who led very decent lives. So that seems to be a very insufficient explanation to start out with. But more importantly, it's a flight from any kind of belief in politics, so that everything becomes a personal story. It's not that, for example, the interests of an Iraqi dictator might be a set of interests. And that one can condemn those interests. It's that somehow we would all be the same if only we'd all sort of own up to our rotten childhoods. And I think that's a kind of flight into the personal that frankly also fits in with a lot of very callous political attitudes that have, in my opinion anyway, taken over during the period that Ronald Reagan and George Bush have been in the White House, a kind of belief that only the personal matters, that you owe no obligations to the larger society or the larger culture. The interesting thing to me about the recovery movement is here are all these people saying, in effect, I'll deal with the outside world when I've healed my wounded inner child. And what that boils down to in practical terms is I won't deal with the larger world. I'll just go on doing this therapeutic exploration of myself.
Well, what interests me is how this language of addiction and recovery slowly but surely makes its way into everyday conversation. The inner child. We see, we hear, we read references to the inner child more and more. And as you say, codependency, it's another, it's kind of a buzzword that everyone thinks they know. What do you think makes this language so compelling?
Well, I think this is a deeply therapeutic culture, a deeply narcissistic culture. People have in some sense made their own psychological development their lifelong vocation. I mean, a more civilized society would think that the idea was to try to grow up, that is, to have a more mature relationship to the world. But instead, what the Bradshaw people want to suggest is that you never have to take any responsibility. You never have to grow up. You are this wonder child, another phrase that Bradshaw uses, although it's obviously gotten less into the language. And the self-indulgence of it can be appalling. In Berkeley, California, which has a very large homeless population, many of the merchants now give sell these 25-cent tickets, a kind of scrip. And the rationale behind this is that people passing don't want to give these homeless people money which they might spend on drink or drugs. And so this scrip is redeemable in stores for food. And a number of people who were interviewed at the time that this movement began said that they felt that they did not want to be codependent with the homeless people's drug or alcohol addiction. Now, I just think that's a grotesque inversion, whatever you may feel about the homeless person. For a person who has a job and is in reasonably good shape psychologically, to worry about their codependency with some person who sleeps in the street and has a life expectancy of 45 seems to me to put it upside down.
I think an argument could be said, and perhaps people involved in the anonymous movements or the codependency movements could argue this better than I, but by looking at the psychodynamics and by trying to explain all this, it's not an excuse. It's not necessarily to let people off the hook. It might be used that way, but the intent is to try to explain and understand oneself.
Yeah, but that's undoubtedly the case, and there's no doubt that through, for example, AA, a lot of people have stopped drinking, and through NA, Narcotics Anonymous, a lot of people have gotten off heroin and coke. But the point is, this movement is now so big and so broad that it includes and invites in, more importantly, all kinds of people who really have no business feeling sorry for themselves in this way. I think it is a kind of, to me, lack of respect for the world to say that your own psychic melodramas almost by definition have more weight than the claims of the world, of your family. And it's very important to remember that one of the things John Bradshaw, for example, asked about relations with the older generation, said, "We didn't come into the world to take care of mommy and daddy." Well, most cultures have believed rather the opposite, that we owe the old certain kinds of respect, and we owe just as we owe the young certain kinds of respect. And it seems to me a very funny idea that you're sort of only in it for yourself. I mean, it's an astonishing worldview.
I think it's fair to say that John Bradshaw would not be the figure he is today without PBS, and he was discovered as a good fundraiser program. What are your thoughts about this marriage between Bradshaw and PBS?
Well, I wish the marriage could be dissolved, but I gather that in any PBS station eager to have a fundraiser, the surest way to get a bigger share of viewers is by running those Bradshaw and the Family programs.
What's wrong with that, though?
Well, what's wrong with that is just simply that Bradshaw's message, I think, is actually quite dangerous to people. And certainly, I think, very dangerous to the culture, because I think it simply produces self-absorption, complacency, and a kind of pitiless disregard for others. You see, it strikes me as being so interesting that the recovery movement has really gotten into gear at precisely the moment when this culture has turned its back on institutionally, on the poor, on people who can't cope, on people genuinely in distress.
In writing this article, did you interview John Bradshaw? Did you read all the books about codependency? Did you attend, I guess you can't attend a lot of meetings, but how close did you get to this whole movement?
You know, I didn't see anybody. I watched all the tapes that I could lay my hands on and listened to a lot of audio tapes by other people besides Bradshaw, and I read every book I could lay my hands on. I have, I think, one of the more complete recovery and codependency libraries in the country. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with it now that I've written the piece, but I own it and I've read it.
Are you better for it?
No, I'm more enraged. and more despairing, because if that is what millions of people believe, then we're in even more trouble than a skeptic and a pessimist like me believed before, because this stuff, I think in the end, for all its claims to be based on compassion, is really very cruel, cruel to the society and cruel to people who can't afford to go to seminars and worry about their own psychic health.
Did you not interview for a specific reason? I mean, did you not want to talk to these people?
Well, I've read a lot of interviews with Bradshaw and indeed quote from several in the piece, and I don't have any particular sense that I'm a better interviewer than the people who've gone to see him. I must say, what I did do is I talked to a number of people who are devotees of this movement, and when this piece is on the stands, who I expect will be very angry with me indeed.
David Reif is the author of an article on the recovery movement in the October issue of Harper's Magazine. This is Fresh Air.